welcome to episode 75 of the Ringside Rundown podcast, brought to you by TWM.news. My name is Eric Vasquez, and joining me on the line is my podcasting partner in crime. Yes, that rhymes. She is Shay Hickson. Shay, what's going on, my friend?
What is up on this fine Tuesday evening? I was excited to record this one. I mean, I always am, but looking at some of these questions we got from our listeners, we got some fun stuff to talk about today.
Nice. I'm excited. Yes, for those that are new here that are listening to the show for the first time, this is a pro wrestling podcast where Shay and I answer your questions that you send in to us through social media regarding anything, anything professional wrestling, anything under the sun involving WWE, AEW, and the like. It is the road to WrestleMania, so I'm sure we have a lot of questions involving that, and I'm sure we have a lot of AEW questions as well.
We do. So we got all the stuff today.
We got a whole smorgasbord.
I mean, that's our dream for this podcast, is when we get a lot of questions. This is what we want to see.
Yes. I was talking to our good friend and loyal listener, Mike, who says that he missed the old format where we would do the recap show by show, but he absolutely loves the new format where we just answer these questions and have fun with it. So I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Let's do the thing.
Let's do the thing. Start off with the first question.
All right, so we're going to go with Jeff's questions, who came in during the last second buzzer beater questions. So Jeff, thank you for sending those in. We're starting off with a hot one tonight. So rumors are swirling about that Bray Wyatt has walked out of WWE. Do we think that the rumor is true? And if so, what are they going to do with that situation?
From what I read, it said that he missed the Madison Square Garden show and he's missed a couple live events due to a physical issue. Didn't say what the physical issue was. They just kind of blanketed it with the physical issue. And that way he's been kind of sidelined with injury, I guess. As far as him walking out, I think the rumor started because there was another rumor that said that Brock Lesnar turned down the opportunity to work with Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
And maybe that rubbed him the wrong way, like he was not worthy.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the situation goes, I'm just hoping, worst case scenario, it kind of sucks. But I'm hoping that it's true, that it's just an injury, that it's nothing serious, that it's not that he's at odds with WWE or anything like that.
Yeah, I agree, because we know how important mental health is to both of us, so hopefully it is just physical. I just found it very odd that they felt the need to just say physical problem. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you couldn't have just said an injury, so right. I'm not sure what that's all about, but hopefully that's not a ruse or anything, and it's just because I thought I saw a picture of like his hand that looked all kind of messed up, so I'm hoping that's the case. But at the end of the day, as long as he's well physically and mentally, that's I think all you could really ask for.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say unless you get some credible source that was there that says, yeah, he's at odds with creative and he walked out. I mean, it's kind of hard to find what is a viable source that would give you that information. But really, if it doesn't come from like Fightful or anything like that, because they do a good job of backing up their information, just kind of take it with a grain of salt, because a lot of these websites are out there just to get clickbait. You know, they just want people clicking on their site, so they'll come up with something that says he walked out because of creative issues, and really it's just he's got a bum hand.
Yeah, exactly, which that kind of stuff, oh, I hate seeing, because that just drives me insane. It's like, just get to the truth. You don't need all the stupid clickbait stuff, because that's how all this chaos happens when no one seems to know what the truth is. So, maybe don't do that.
Yeah.
All right. I knew Jeff was going to bring this one up, because I knew he was very sad about it. So, Saray has officially left WWE and is heading back to do freelancing in Japan. Do we feel she is another missed opportunity or someone who just couldn't adjust to the WWE style? I think it was a missed opportunity. I don't think it really had anything to do with like the style. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I feel like she was just a victim of terrible timing because I feel like, if I remember correctly, she was supposed to come in before COVID happened, which was, we always say, the better version of NXT. So she would have thrived in that era of NXT. But I think it was just everything just went to shit timing wise. And just as she was starting to try and find her footing, NXT 2.0 came in, and that was just a whole mess in and of itself. And then we had that very, I think safe to say, racist character they put on her as, like, the schoolgirl with the superpowers. So, yeah, I think it was more of a missed opportunity just because of terrible timing.
Yeah, I think it was more of a missed opportunity. We never really got to see what she was really capable of. There wasn't really anything that she sunk her teeth into that was defining in her WWE career. So it's hard to say if she couldn't adapt to the WWE style. I think when in NXT, they really rely on the fact that a lot of people that come into that system really do know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't really need an overhaul of training. Like, you don't need to uproot everything you've learned and become this person that, you know, doesn't know how to wrestle anything at all. You know, I think they trusted her and believed in her. That's why they signed her and brought her in. I thought they probably had ideas for her, but again, like you said, COVID happened, that threw a wrench in plans, and then they wanted to overhaul NXT and turn it into NXT 2.0, which I think she would have fit well in if they would have just given her something that she could have sunk her teeth into. I think the Tiffany Stratton stuff wasn't really good. No. It wasn't really good. I think it was, even though I read that she enjoyed working with Tiffany Stratton and she enjoyed doing the bits with Chase U, I think it was just that bringing in someone else that was kind of green, and then working with someone who may not know how to communicate in the ring the best they can. You know, it was just like, things didn't work out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, all the forces were just against this thing catching fire, which I really wish they could have, because she was the bits and pieces. I was like there was a lot of potential there for someone to take over and kind of be like another Asuka, you know, that could have had that force that she just brings in, that Japanese flair, you know. And but we never really got to see that, unfortunately.
No, and it was a shame because, like you said, there were glimpses of a very talented wrestler. I mean, like I said, I specifically remember that one match she had with Dakota Kai was perhaps her best match she had in WWE, but sadly we didn't get to see more of it. But hopefully she does well in Japan. I'm sure she will, because she was highly touted when she was coming to WWE, so I wouldn't be surprised if she goes over and just kills it in Japan when she goes back.
Hey, good luck to her.
Yes, definitely good luck to Sarray. All right, so what do we think about the new story angles with Otis and Gable, and do we think anything good will come from it?
Well, from what I've been seeing online, rumblings online, so take this with a grain of salt, because like I said earlier, it is the internet, so you can't really trust it 100%. No. They are trying to maybe give Gable a push as a single star, and maybe they're trying to break him away from Otis, or Otis, as his new character is. Oy. I mean, God bless him. He's, you know, he really just goes out there, Otis, and just whatever they tell him to do, he's all about it, and he gets it done. So credit to him for at least being a team player and seeing whatever creative direction they have going. But I'm really interested in seeing what Chad Gable can do on his own. I think he's a really good, he has these sneaky good matches with different people in the company. He just has these sneaky good matches, then he adapts well to everybody else. So I think he can be a really good hand, and maybe they can catch fire with this.
Yeah, I agree, because out of those two, you knew that Otis was always going to be the comedy act. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a decent wrestler, but he's more around for the comedy, not so much the in-ring talent. But Gable, on the other hand, definitely has a lot of in-ring talent. Like you said, so many sneaky good matches with pretty much anyone. He could have a really good match with just about anybody on the roster. So if they just give him a little bit of a push, I'm excited to see what they can do.
Yeah, I really am. I think he can be, you know, there's obviously the comparisons to like Kurt Angle and everything like that. So I think he could really be a solid worker going forward, and seeing who he can mix it up with in a singles competition.
I completely agree, and I can't wait to see. I'd like to see like him and Johnny Gargano go at it, just to see what happens. Nice.
That'd be nice. I think they could build a really nice feud. Hopefully they build, now that you mentioned Gargano, I know he's got the NXT thing and Stand and Deliver with Grayson Waller, and that seems to be the most compelling thing he's done in the past year since moving on from NXT. The most compelling thing he's done is go back to NXT, so hopefully that changes after WrestleMania and they really build him up.
Yeah, I completely agree, because Gargano is way too good to be wasted on just silly comedy storylines too, because that whole thing with The Miz was not it.
Yeah, it didn't hit.
Nah, not at all. So now we got some women's division questions. Well, singular question, but folks are predicting that Trish Stratus is going to turn heel at WrestleMania to feud with Becky Lynch until SummerSlam. Do we think that'll actually happen? Ooh. I mean, I would like to see it happen so Damage Control wins the match. I just want to see Dakota win, but I could see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even need the whole Trish turning heel aspect of it. Just make the match, you know? Like, I think we're at this point in 2023 where this is one of those things where it's just something we want to see. I think since this, I don't know, I don't want to say a revolution, but this like revitalization of women's wrestling, I think has reinvigorated Trish, because Trish was a really weird spot. I feel like she went the tail end of her career, she was having better wrestling matches, and then we started to see that she was a great wrestler, that she can get it done in the ring, but it was too late for her in her career. She wanted to move on and do other things. Now that we have this whole revamped women's division where wrestling is a focal point, with like people like Bianca Belair, Damage Control, Becky Lynch, you know, Charlotte Flair, really good wrestling, where wrestling is the focal point and not what you look like. I think Trish kind of has that itch, you know? Like, she had the match against Charlotte Flair, which was actually really, really good. And this is coming from someone who really wasn't a Trish Stratus fan. But it was really, really good against Charlotte. So if the plan is for her to have a match against Becky at SummerSlam, I'm down. I would love to see it. I think it'll be a great match.
Yeah, I would love to see it. Like you said, you don't even need to have her turn heel. Just have those two just start going at it. Like, that just, the story just writes itself. So,
Yeah,
I'll be excited to see it if that actually does happen.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait to see what's going down. WrestleMania, like you said, Damage Control, a really big spot, especially for someone like Dakota, who was released a year ago, and then fast forward a year, now she has a match on WrestleMania, so that's pretty good for her.
I could talk about that all day. I feel I'll save that for when it's closer to WrestleMania, but I'm definitely excited to see that. I will have my Dakota Kai shirt on, and then if Shayna gets on the card, I will then change to Shayna's shirt, or vice versa, depending on who's on the card first. But we'll see what happens. But I'm just happy one of them's on.
Deliver that good mojo.
Yeah, I have to. I have a whole closet full of like shirts that, if need be, I can get it done. But just happy Dakota's on the card for now. So we'll take the win when we can get it. Cool. So, with the current TV product, what does AEW need to do to catch back up to WWE?
Well, first, I'm glad that he recognized that there's a disconnect between AEW and WWE in terms of what is the better product. I'm not trashing AEW. I just feel like WWE going into WrestleMania is like firing on all cylinders, and they're getting everything. Not everything, but they're getting at least 75% of what they put out. They're hitting it on the mark. So I think that's good for them. I think with AEW, they have a tendency to kind of just throw things at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
You know, whereas WWE is more, everything is more fleshed out. you know, we have clear-cut storylines going on with built-in stories that have taken months and months and months to accumulate, whereas AEW kind of just does things on a whim, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like we're waiting for that big story to kind of develop in AEW, but we haven't really gotten it. It's every story kind of has an expiration for about a month or so, and then they move on to something else, which is not really a bad thing. But at the top of the card, you want something, you know, I mean, it's hard to put something up against the Bloodline and that story, but you want something that has people in that same mindset that goes, man, this is a great story where it's going to culminate with things happening in the ring that we definitely want to see. Whereas, like I said, AEW kind of just does things on a whim, and some of it works, some of it doesn't.
Yeah, and I think WWE has a slightly more fleshed out women's division than AEW. It's just tough because you see all of these talented women on like Dark and Elevation, and you kind of wonder, why are they not being used on TV? Like, we kind of said it before, you guys literally have 3 hours of programming a week. Could you do a little bit more than two women's matches, or at least, you know, do something? Because sometimes it just kind of feels like an afterthought. At least with WWE, you have multiple women's storylines going on at the same time, and they are quality storylines for the most part. I mean, AEWs are kind of... It's one of those, I feel like, especially with the whole outsiders versus like homegrown thing, is that they're close to like having a very successful feud, but just something just feels off, at least to me. I don't know what it is. Maybe, I think it was just maybe the whole like spray paint kind of thing where it's like, oh, let's just turn them into like middle school bullies, where it's like, no, you really didn't need to do that, but you did it just because, I guess. So yeah, I'd say you may have to give the WWE a slight edge with its women's division than AEW, but yeah, there's some improvement.
Yeah, I think what's not hitting for me when it comes to the outcast, as they're known in AEW, is I don't really fall in line with the whole Mean Girls aspect of it.
No.
We have to be bullies. I get the whole, you know, we're going up against the homegrown talent or something like that, but you don't have to go around spray painting. I think that's kind of been overdone, you know, with the whole NWO sort of situation, you know, and it kind of harkens back to that. But it just screams like mean girl bully, and I don't know. It just, that doesn't, I can't identify with that in any shape. So it's kind of hard for me to kind of fall into it. And they had the audacity to attack my big wrestling fandom in my heart. They attacked my heart, Riho, who I love very, very much, which I said, that's when I was like, okay, this Mean Girl sort of deal is just, it's kind of overdone, you know?
Yeah, and I guess it's just kind of, I guess it's just so weird to me, because I remember when Saraya was on the complete opposite end of these kind of storylines, where the Mean Girls in NXT were picking on her because she was the outcast, but I mean, obviously, like, the roles are reversed in a way now, but it's just like, this just isn't, like you said, it doesn't need to be like the Mean Girls middle school bully stuff. Like, you could legitimately have them be, I don't know, like, cynical with a chip on their shoulder because they did all of these things even before they got to AEW, and they are not getting the recognition because, oh, they're the outsiders. It's like, you could have literally done that without the spray paint and just the, like, pettiness.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. It's just, I guess it's kind of hard, but it also, like, you kind of look at it and it's like, how stereotypical we're going to have catty mean girls bully other girls, and, you know, for the sake of pettiness, you know, because they come from different places and things like that. So it's just like, it's just a little weird, you know. I feel like it's kind of low hanging, not really creative. You know, and Ruby, I feel like, is going to be the one to kind of make this work. You know, she's going to be like, I have to make this work because I've been put in this position. Whereas Saraya and a little bit like Toni Storm, they kind of just like, I don't want to say skate by, but they're just kind of coasting on their name, you know?
Yeah, and I will say, at least as of right now, besides Britt and Jamie, because duh, obviously, the other bright spot of this feud is Ruby, and I noticed we do have a question about it, so I will save my feelings for later, but there are some bright spots about it, but it could be better, but we just kind of went for the old tried and true bully stuff, and it's not working for me.
Yeah, I wonder if it's working for other people.
I don't think so. I think I never really see any. Well, I think most people are always just kind of like going after Soraya because of her significant other, which totally understandable.
Yeah, but that guy is a whole nother story.
Yeah, that's a yikes. That's a big old bag of yikes. But
it really is.
Oh God. Yeah. So I feel like that's all I usually see on Twitter. I don't really hear like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. Oh, this absolutely sucks. But I feel like it leans more towards, yeah, this isn't the best. At least that's from what I've seen. But who knows? Some people might like it. So it's like, you know what? Again, back to the you like what you like. So.
Yeah, no gatekeeping here at the Ringside Run.
No, let's not. We're not going to be those people. All right. Why do we think WWE chose The Miz as the WrestleMania host for this year?
Because he's a vet, I guess. I'm trying to be positive here.
Give him something to do.
Yeah, because he's a vet and they don't have anything for him in terms of the actual card. And he kind of plays that Hollywood A-lister character anyway, and they're going to Hollywood, so yeah, it's like
makes sense. Know,
why not, you know?
That and I think he throws his like all into everything he does in WWE, so if he's gonna be the host, he's gonna do it big, so you gotta give him props for that. I feel like it was, they had nothing for him, so this is the best they could do.
Yeah, I mean, he's the ultimate company guy. You know, and it's not a bad thing when I say that. You know, some people can be that. And honestly, if I was a professional wrestler, I would be that type of person where I'm just a company guy. You know, whatever you need me to do, I'm gonna do it to the best of my ability. And this is something that he's gonna do to the best of his ability. I'm sure they're gonna have something big, like a Miz TV segment during the show. And something big's going to happen because it's Hollywood. So he's going to be a part of a big moment. So I wouldn't be too upset, you know, like if I was The Miz that, oh, I'm just the host of WrestleMania and nothing more. So,
yeah, I would just be happy I'd be on the card in some capacity. Because, like, I would probably be the same. I wouldn't want to be someone who, if they come into the locker room, everyone else is like, oh, God, they're here. They're just going to cause some problems or whatever. It's like, I just want to come in, do my thing. And if the company's happy, that's, you know, what's what you get paid for. So,
yeah, you and I are very do our job type people.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like my boss would probably agree with that. Yeah, no, it is. Because it's like, I don't like to cause unnecessary drama when it's not required or called for. Because it's just like, it just is a mess for everyone involved, so you just do what you can to be a good person.
Yeah, simple.
Yeah, just don't overcomplicate things. That's all I got, I guess. All right, so Jeff's last question is, who do we think will join Rey Mysterio as Hall of Fame inductees this year?
Ooh, good question. I saw something that was really exciting, inducting the Great Muta.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's been finalized or anything like that. I didn't see anything on Twitter or anything like that, but I thought inducting the Great Muta would be pretty cool. You're kind of running out of names almost.
Yeah.
Like of who's not in, you know, that deserves to be in. I always wish that they would make a physical Hall of Fame building.
Yeah, you know, to go see the things.
Yeah, to go see it. Turn it into like a museum. I think that would be pretty cool, and I think that would be something that the company can use to be a benefit. But really, I the last name I saw was the Great Muta, and that kind of excited me. I think Hulk Hogan was trying to push for the Ray and his brother, the Rougeau brothers, to get inducted into the Hall of Fame. So you know, anytime you have Hogan on your side,
Yikes. That's a bit of a yikes if that's if he's on your side, but
That was the reaction I was looking for.
oof, no thanks. I saw and I thought it was a little interesting. I saw Stacy Keibler, which it's tough because we've been through this before where it's like, as much as I'd like to not remember the Divas era, the Ruthless Aggression era up until like the mid 2010s, it was still a part of wrestling history. You kind of have to, they were good for what they were at the time, which is a shame, as objectified as they were. But I mean, I guess, I don't know. It's just, I
That's a
don't
name
know.
I haven't heard for a while. Stacy Keibler.
I
She
know.
really, she really, uh, she was the embodiment of, like you said, that sort of eye candy, look at me, diva persona that really wasn't doing anything in the ring
No.
besides looking good. And I mean, that was her job and she did it to the best of her ability. So why not?
Yeah, why not, right? Because you kind of just have to at this point, I suppose. But yeah, it is what it is. So that was all of Jeff's questions. So Jeff, thank you again.
Thank you, Jeff.
Let's go on to Mom's questions. So Mom, thank you. This one I was hoping we would talk about. Why the sudden start stop booking for poor old Wardlow?
Good question. That
That
is a
poor
very
guy.
good question. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I was kind of rooting for Hobbs to win
Yeah, me too.
just because it was different. I mean, but I mean, I didn't want it to go down the way that it went down with QT Marshall.
No, that was so dumb.
I think that kind of put a damper on the whole thing.
Yeah, because Hobbs could have easily just beaten Wardlow by himself. He didn't need any help.
Right, and you remember when that match was happening, I messaged you and I was like, this is the best way to put on a big man, because Lesnar and Omos has been a big discussion on the podcast in terms of big man wrestling. And I was like, if you look at this is a great example of two athletic big men having the match. And then you were like, yeah, but why did they need QT Marshall when
We
he
were
shows up?
literally, our point from the question earlier is they were so close, and yet they just couldn't see it through fully.
But as far as like his start stop booking, I really don't know, because like he has potential, and I think it's one of those things where they're in trouble with Wardlow because they might not be able to catch the same lightning in the bottle they had when he would do this powerbomb symphony and the crowd was really, really into it and they wanted to see five, six powerbombs and they would go ape shit after every one. I don't know if they're going to be able to recreate that kind of magic that they had, that organic magic with Wardlow.
No.
And that's kind of that kind of it kind of sucks, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was most worried about when he won at Revolution. I was like, they really booked themselves into a lose-lose situation here because either Wardlow loses and literally loses the title 3 days after he wins it, or you have Hobbs lose, who literally just won the Face of the Revolution ladder match. So somebody was going to get damaged in some way losing that match.
Right, which is why I didn't understand why Wardlow won in the first place. I think it would have been a more compelling match, even though the match was great. Like I said earlier, the match was great. It was really interesting to see two big men of that size be that agile and that quick on their feet, and it wasn't a bumbling mess like where I'm expecting at WrestleMania, and I'm gonna keep hammering that.
You'll get a chance to keep doing it, trust me.
I think it would have been more compelling to have Samoa Joe keep that title, go up against Hobbs, and if he beats Hobbs, he beats Hobbs. He lost to Samoa Joe, no big deal. But the thing is, they had something with the King of Television idea for Samoa Joe, and they kind of ruined that by taking one of his belts away. You know? Yeah. So it's like, it's one of those things, like we said earlier, it's like they throw things at a wall, see what sticks, and then it only lasts about a month until they move on to the next thing, hoping they hope to catch lightning in a bottle. And I think that's what they're doing. They're chasing lightning, you know?
That might not ever show up.
Right, that might not ever show up. You're going to keep chasing it, chasing that lightning, and it might not happen for you. And so you run yourself, like you said, into a corner. They just need to flush things out. Maybe do some sort of booking where they're thinking, you know, 4, 5, 6 months ahead of time, you know, and with their stories, and be firm with your stories, but also pay attention to what the fans are saying. Even though the fans can be a little outrageous and sometimes you have to be firm, maybe do some storylines that'll take about 6 months of time and see how that goes and then work that way.
Plan some shit out. See what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. It's just a shame because we saw how popular Wardlow can get. And I think that, and I feel like that's AEW's problem too, is that they kind of set a lot of their talent up to absolutely fail. Because let's go back to the whole Trios title thing. What the hell would have happened if House of Black would have lost that match? That would have been, you don't want to be like the nail in the coffin, essentially. Because how the hell would you have booked House of Black to recover from something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. Thankfully, they won. I'm a little nervous about this match coming up.
Don't even say it. Don't even speak that evil into existence.
I'm a little nervous, you know, because not only does that match exist, but Jeff Jarrett versus Orange Cassidy exists. And the way I'm thinking booking-wise is, two vets like Jericho and Jarrett are not going to lose on the same show. One of them is going to win.
I hope they both lose, but I guess if I had to pick the lesser of two evils, I suppose I'd rather have Jarrett, mostly for the fact that I don't want House of Black losing already. I know you don't want House of Black losing, no, so.
And the thing is, if House of Black ends up winning this thing, it'll do wonders for their title reign already.
Oh, yeah. Their first title defense would be both the Elite and Chris Jericho, as much as we despise him. That's a big deal.
Yeah. I'm just a little nervous, that's all.
I am too, and I will continue to be until tomorrow night. Ugh, God, I can't take it. This is more of a comment than an actual question. Mom finds it hilarious that every time Ruby comes out, Taz sings her entrance music horribly every time. It's like, you know what? At least he has a sense of humor. Like, you just got to go. Yeah. You know what? Nobody else in that crowd will sing her damn music. So you know what? Taz might as well. Like, how have people not caught on to this?
And that's the thing. Taz is one of my favorite commentators. You know, he's kind of crazy. And the way he kind of goes off the rails a little bit. But when he's on, like I said a bunch of times on this podcast, when he's on and he's analyzing things, he's actually really, really, really good. And I always crack up when he sings Ruby Soho. He used to do that in TNA with Mickie James when she used to have the hardcore country theme. Hardcore country is just fantastic stuff. Stuff to make you laugh, you know?
Right. Sometimes you just have to laugh. That's all we want. Just want some humor. Also, she believes that FTR returning at Revolution was a plus. Yeah, I was somewhat surprised. I didn't really expect them to show up, but because we never really knew what was going on with all the like contract stuff, and oh, they're taking like 6 months off or something, and there they are. So I'm glad they're back because I kind of just don't want to see the guns with the belts anymore. But
I don't know. Like, as far as I know, they still haven't signed anything, have they?
I don't know. I heard the rumor that they had already signed extensions or they already had like long-term deals anyway, so I don't know. Who knows?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. FTR is one of those groups, those tag teams that no matter where they go, whether it's AEW, WWE, Japan, wherever they go, they're going to have banger matches. They're just a complete tag team. They know exactly what their game is. They know exactly how to get it done in the ring. So wherever they go, they're going to make a lot of money. And you know, as much as we rag on the Ass Boys, the Guns, I think they can actually have a pretty good match with these young kids. And I hopefully take the best. This is one of those things where I know we criticize AEW for doing kind of flash in the pan sort of deals and things don't last more than a month. But it was one of those deals. Somebody had posted a video on Twitter. It was a video clip of when House of Black won the belts and the crowd reaction from when they won to when the Guns won their match at Revolution. Yeah. And it was just dead silence. Maybe it's not working. Maybe you just have to keep it going out of spite and kind of build them up that way. And maybe they can get heat that way of just continuously winning when they shouldn't win.
Maybe, but you got to be careful because after a while it's just going to get old.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Hopefully in that time they figure out how to get better as a team.
That would be great, wouldn't it? That would be just that'd be just fantastic. Yeah, I don't know. Oh shit! Hold on. Speaking of mom, Shay's actually calling right now. I'll be right back.
Sure, no problem. In this meantime, I just want to plug away and say where you can find this podcast. Spotify actually owns Anchor FM, which distributes this podcast all across the board in the internet. So now you can get it through Spotify Podcasts, Apple, Stitcher, Google, wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you can't find it, hit us up on social media at Ringside Rundown and we'll give you a link to the podcast so there's no problems and you can listen to it. Don't worry, I'll go over it again at the end of the show. Just want to get that in while Shay handles her business. All right, guys, looks like we're back here. So why don't we get to the next question on the docket in the mailbag segment?
All right, so we got mom's last question, or more of a comment. Poor Danhausen. Yeah, it looks like he's not having the best luck right now. I have a feeling he may be hurt.
Really?
Yeah, because I think it was on, I don't remember if it was Rampage or Dynamite. I think it was Dynamite. He had a sling. And I'm like, that's not good.
Ooh.
And there was some tweet he had yesterday, I think, about like, him needing good vibes from the Fanhausens. I'm like, oh no. I'm like, please, no. I'm like, please no. And then apparently he was supposed to be at some like comic book some store or something signing with Ethan Page and he had to cancel. So that's not good. That is not good at all. Cause if they lose Danhausen for a specific period of time, oh boy.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I think Danhausen's one of those ones where they can really capitalize and put him on a level like an Orange Cassidy and he would get over massively. And I feel like they haven't really done anything with him. So hopefully he's not hurt. Hopefully it's nothing serious and he gets all the good vibes that he needs to get back. And hopefully AEW can use him proper.
I sure hope so. Cause we've been screaming about it for a very long time now. So at some point it'll work maybe, but
yeah,
who knows? All right, so those are all of Mom's questions, so thank you again.
Thanks, Mom.
Let's move on to Jack's questions. Starting off hot, has Triple H dropped the ball with the WWE Women's Division? Both championship feuds are lackluster at the moment, although I'm sure the matches will be solid. Yeah. It's kind of hard to argue a little bit.
I want your take.
Because both title matches on paper sound great, but it's just kind of the build up to it's just been a little like off, at least to me. And then the fact that you put the women's tag titles in a six woman tag, so they're not even going to be defended at least on night one. Who knows about night two? But what is going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I think like you said, on paper, Bianca Belair versus Asuka is a big time match that's going to do wonders on the card. I think they're going to go out there and they're really going to show off what they can do. So I don't think there's anything wrong with who's been booked and where they've been booked.
No.
I just think the build-ups, like you said, the build-ups have been a little bit lackluster. I think we need to see a little bit more action than them, and all we're getting is a lot of posing.
Yeah, and you can only stare at a pose for so long. We need to see some action here.
Right. Yeah, I want to see some pull-apart brawls, something like that. Something to show that you know, there's some animosity between these people. We've gotten it with the six-woman tag match, but I'm speaking more of the individual singles matches. Like I said, Bianca Belair versus Asuka, which should be a good match. It's a good match on paper. And yeah, same goes for Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley is becoming a mega star, so I would be surprised if she doesn't pull this off at WrestleMania, because her star power is just week by week. It's just growing and growing.
I sure hope so. I mean, if either of those two feuds have a pull apart brawl, it would be Charlotte and Rhea. Let's be real.
Right.
And if they're going to do it, please don't wait until literally the last show before WrestleMania. That would be fantastic, because it's a little too late at that point. But I guess better late than never, but maybe just don't do that. I don't know. They need to ramp it up. We only got a few weeks, like 2 or 3 weeks.
We only got like 20 days, 20, 19 days, something like that. So
exactly. So got to pick up the pace a little bit.
Definitely.
how many weeks will, or how many weeks until Otis is doing Chris Farley's Chippendale skit? I mean,
oh man,
it could happen.
That is something I don't know if I'm ready to see.
I don't think we need to see that, but you never know.
We don't need to see him oiled up or lathered up in any sort of liquid or concoction or anything like that doing a jive.
Please, no.
Oh man,
we don't need that. It's fine. No thanks.
No thanks.
we'll just skip that one. All right, so this is the question that I've been waiting for, and as soon as I saw it, I'm like, this is why I love our listeners, because I know just what to ask. What did we think of Ruby's promo on Dynamite? He usually hates the "you fans turned on me" promo, but this one was actually accurate for the most part. All right, well, I'm going to be completely honest. When I first listened to it initially, and I sent you this message, I'm like, really? Are we doing the, oh, you fans are the ones that turned your back on me stuff? I'm like, seriously? This is just, like, stupid. Why would they take the low road? But then when I watched it a couple times, I went back and I'm like, you know what? This was actually a really good promo on Ruby's part. And it really does. She does make some good points. Everyone was loving her until she went in a Dynamite Grand Slam against Britt, and everybody was cheering for Britt. Went into the TBS tournament semifinals against Stat and beat Stat, and everyone booed her out of the building. So I can see it. And I know I told you this too, but when she was like, "No one was ever mad when I lost matches," I'm like, I was, Ruby. I was one of the ones that was mad. So we existed. Don't worry. But no, that was a really, really good promo on Ruby's part. And if they were smart, they would just let her do all the promo work for the Outsiders or the Outcast, because we don't need to hear any more of Saraya and Tony currently.
Well, I was going to say, if Saraya and Tony did what Ruby did, that could probably help matters.
I would hope.
I want to hear their perspective. You know, why are they so bitter against the homegrown talent? Because I feel like you said, Ruby did a great job of hammering her points, and a lot of her points made sense. So why can't Saraya and Tony do the same thing, and we can kind of see their point of view? Because again, like I said earlier, it just seems like Ruby's the driving force now.
Yeah.
You know, she's the one to take serious in the group of women that are just kind of being mean girls.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think if we got a serious promo from Saraya and a serious promo from Tony explaining their reasonings as to why they're doing the things that they're doing, it would do wonders for the group. But yeah, it's just her promo, like you said, she had some valid points. She had some valid points, and you never want to be the one to be like, well, was I that fan that she's talking about? You know, the
neckbeard,
you know, sort of deal. I can see why people get turned off by that, because it's kind of like, it kind of screams like, I'm trying to get heat. Like, you know, I'm trying to get, you know, some recognition. But I thought she did a pretty good job.
I think so too, and I did enjoy when she mentioned Stat's name, the crowd lost their minds. So I'm like, you guys do remember. So that's helpful. So I'm thinking maybe that's a little hint of a certain somebody coming back. I'm just going to keep saying it until it happens, because, you know, at some point it has to. In a perfect world, Statlander comes back in Pittsburgh next month. But, you know, I can dream, I suppose. I'm still holding
on to that show.
Yeah, I am.
Nice.
So I'll have to have my on the scene reporting. So we'll get a first hand account of what happens on that Dynamite and Rampage. But I'm still holding on to hope that Statlander will beat Jade for the title. There's still hope out there, I suppose. I can still dream. And maybe the universe will just be like, if you shut up about it, we'll let it happen. Which is all I want in the end. I just want Stat to hold some gold, and I want Jade to not have the belt anymore. So best of both worlds.
Yeah, there's like a weird subsect of wrestling fans that are like really pulling for Jade to be like the next Goldberg and just
Please
go on
no.
this incredible run.
See, I think you could call it a run. I'm not so sure I would call it incredible, because it's pretty much just kind of the same stuff the entire time. So it's not really anything new. I kind of loved how her match against Red Velvet they thought was her toughest challenge yet. And I'm like, yeah, was it though? Because it kind of just falls under the formula of the other opponent gets the upper hand for like 5 seconds and then Jade hits him with a boot and it's over.
Yeah, that's the one thing, that's the one criticism I have of Jade Cargill matches, is that we never really see her fight from underneath.
Barely.
You know, like, see somebody take it to her and truly be her toughest test.
Yeah.
We haven't really seen that, but again, if you look at her list of competitors that she's faced, none of those people have the credentials to be that person.
No.
You know? To kind of take it to her. And none of her opponents are names that you would remember. Like, I can't remember, like you said, the Red Velvet match. But she's had a bunch of matches against Red Velvet. You know?
Yeah. And the Bunny and Anna Jay and Nyla Rose. And I feel like Nyla's about as high profile as you got on the list.
Right. And it's like I can remember. I mean, Nyla Rose just had a banger match against Riho. And then I can remember Riho had a banger match last week against Emi Sakura. You know, it's like, I can remember these matches, but I can't remember any Jade Cargill match that was like, you know, that blew my socks off.
Yeah, and it's sad because I feel like we talked about it last week when Jade kind of pulled the, I want the best that like Canada has to offer. It's like, well, Trish Stratus is not going to be there, so that you kind of can't say that and expect people to not think Trish Stratus. But it's just sad that it does not matter who they put in that match tomorrow. I guess technically today, if you're listening to it when we release this. But does it even matter? Like, does anyone actually think whoever this mystery opponent from Canada is going to actually beat Jade? Like, come on.
No,
I got nothing.
I don't think so. I don't think they will, but it's I'm thinking Taya Valkyrie is going to be the one. That's my name. And if Jade can pull off a win against her, if it's a believable win.
Yeah.
You know, this could be the one match that I'm looking for. Maybe this is the one match that I'm looking for.
Hopefully, cuz the only other two names cuz I was kind of like looking up women's wrestlers from Canada that weren't like, you know, in WWE or just retired or whatever, and the only two names I could really look at and be like, yeah, I suppose that would be some like decent competition for Jade is Gail Kim and Lufisto. But
ooh, Lufisto in particular would be awesome,
right? Lufisto. like
because she's had a career.
It's like, please pull a good batch. Please pull a good batch out of Jade, I'm begging you. Like,
anybody, really.
Anyone.
Whoever's answering that call.
Help.
We need you to pull a good one out, you know?
SOS, please.
And it's tough because she's getting training from Bryan Danielson. And Danielson's like, maybe if she went to Japan. he's like trying to stooge her off to other places.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, it's like, oh man, does she really need help that bad?
And, I mean, if even Danielson's just like, you know what, maybe you could like get some training over there. That usually is not a very good a good indicative of your talent there, but
and they don't really give a shit if you come from AEW, WWE, or wherever, you know.
They will kick the shit out of you in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows at this point? I'm still gonna hope that Stat beats her for that title because that's the only answer I'm willing to accept at this point.
But yeah, I think that's in the cards. I honestly think that's in the cards.
Again, I think Fate's just getting tired of me yelling about it every other week. So at some point, they're just going to be like, if you would just shut up about it, we'll let it happen. Like, please. Time will tell, though. Just a matter of when Stat comes back.
Yeah, she's been out for a while, hasn't she?
Even a month would be too long for me anyway. So we don't get into another rant of that. Moving on. Is Orange Cassidy the best champ in wrestling at the moment?
Who asked this question?
Jack.
Jack, how dare you?
Oh no.
How dare you on the Tribal Chief's
oh no.
internet.
on his wrestling podcast.
On the Tribal Chief's wrestling podcast. How dare you even compare? And I love Orange Cassidy.
Yeah.
How dare you even compare a 900 plus day reign to a belt that just got a new name?
Just for a movie.
Just for a movie.
That's it. That's literally the only reason why. They just said it's just because of promote the movie. And I'm like, they'll literally latch onto anything, won't they?
They have no choice. They got it.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Got
y'all riled up.
Got my blood boiling.
This is just oh my god, on the official Bloodline fan club podcast, how dare you
disrespect the Tribal Chief, the head of the table, the goat. He's in god mode. I don't know, I've said all the phrases I can think of.
You're just like, listen to me mad right now. This is me being mad.
I'm going full on Bloodline Sami Zayn mode right now. How dare you?
You're like, I can feel my blood pressure increasing at the moment.
Orange Cassidy.
So I think that answers your question, Jack. I hope it does anyway.
With that said, I don't want him to lose to Jeff Jarrett. Here's the thing. It's like if you criticize Jeff Jarrett on Twitter, you're gonna get a whole mess of like your mentions. Of like these wrestling purists that are gonna just be like, how dare you hate on Jeff Jarrett?
But he's like, gonna literally—they'll literally turn into what you were just like 5 minutes ago.
Probably.
How dare you on Jeff Jarrett's internet on his Twitter page?
And it's like I get it, you know, the whole nostalgia thing, and you want to be that guy, but it's just like Orange Cassidy, man. He literally wrestles with his hands in his pockets.
Yeah.
And the matches are fantastic.
Exactly.
So I don't want to see his title reign end anytime soon. I think he's on a pretty good title reign. That said, it's not as good as Roman Reigns, but it's a pretty good title reign. And I don't want to see it end. But like I said earlier, I'm a little too worried. When you have two vets on the same show vying for championship gold, I don't think both of them are going to lose.
I don't even want to think about it because it's just going to make me nervous all over again. I can't do it. Just let House of Black and Orange both hold on to the titles. That's all we want for at least tomorrow.
Yeah.
So too much to ask.
I don't know if it's going to happen, but
I can't. I can't even think of. I can't even think of that without making. Without cringing. So before we completely lose our minds, moving on. Okay, this is definitely more your question than mine. Are you excited for the heel Blackpool Combat Club? Jack hopes we get to see them face FTR, the Elite, and House of Black at some point.
Yeah, I think one of the cool things about this whole thing is like it kind of came out of nowhere, and then the first victims, let's just say, of this whole thing is the Dark Order. So they figured out a way to get the Dark Order into some things and get them a part of the mix. I mean, that's kind of what the Blackpool Combat Club is. It's just like smash mouth in your face. We don't care about being friendly or anything like that. We just want to fight people. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe because this is what I was thinking at first. because everybody's kind of like, oh, well, Blackpool Combat Club just turn heel. I didn't know at first if it was majority like a heel turn or just general animosity, you know, which you kind of just, that would describe them as kind of being in between, like tweeners, like,
yeah, blurring the lines.
Yeah, they're blurring the line. I think that's what it mostly is that they're not playing a heel or face character. They're just all about the Black Bull Combat Club, and that's what comes first.
Yeah, I could see that. Honestly, it could really go either way at this point. It's just a matter of what they're going to continue to do with Hangman and the Dark Order.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, the one perplexing thing that I thought was, after the Texas Death Match, why are we continuing this whole thing with Hangman Page? That should have been the end-all, be-all. What can you do from now, like, besides kill each other, you know?
Exploding barbed wire death match.
Oh, no. They
with firework crackers and everything.
They did that once, and it didn't turn out the way they thought it was going to turn out.
See, I don't know if it was just me, but when they were like, oh, yeah, Moxley's wrestling literally 3 days after Revolution, I'm like, this guy was just hanged with a metal chain, and he's just coming back to work next day like nothing ever happens. Like, this guy is insane.
That's the thing. Like, that's the thing about AEW is maybe they don't think these things through, you know.
No, I wouldn't
put him on TV.
No, you gotta sell it a little bit, at least make him look at least somewhat vulnerable and make Hangman look good.
Right, exactly. Have him go away for like 2 or 3 weeks and then
give him a break, for God's sake.
For real, he really does deserve that break, because he's been the anchor of AEW since he came into the company. You know, he's been the anchor. But it's just, I was just so confused as to why are we still doing this, you know, thing against Hangman when we literally just had a death match. Like you said, the man was hanged by a metal chain. Yeah. You know?
Just another day at the office.
Forehead with forks.
Thrown through barbed wire, you know, just the usual office stuff. But
yeah, it's like what's, if that's not the payoff, what's the payoff?
Blood and guts.
Oh, well.
Yeah, see, I got you there, didn't I?
You did, but it's like,
why?
Yeah, I mean, but then again, it's like, who else?
You know? Just more blood.
More blood, more guts.
More pain.
Yeah, more blood. God, can they find somebody else to bleed? Maybe, like,
no. Get the women to do it. Britt's pretty open to bleeding, so.
Yeah,
get the real hardcore legend to do some bleeding around here, okay? Like, get Britt. All right, whatever. Whatever. All right, so that was all of Jack's questions. So, Jack, thank you. And all right, some of our last questions are from Mike. So, Mike, thank you for your questions. And we actually have to go back a few days. He tagged you and I in a very interesting tweet about WWE wanting to, ask the U.S. States to allow gambling on its matches. And obviously, Mike wanted to get our thoughts on that.
I think it's stupid. I thought since the when they would say, because they would say things before things like DraftKings and FanDuel and stuff like that came out, they would do these things I would see on Twitter, like the Vegas betting odds for the WrestleMania matches or this. And I'd be like, who the hell is betting on wrestling?
They're probably out there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, they are out there, because obviously they wouldn't be doing this if there weren't people out there betting. But who bets on a predetermined sport? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
And then
it goes back to, well, how would this work? And Dave Meltzer and Lance Storm were having a conversation about it and said that the only way it would really work is if they go back to the old days of, because they said that basically they would do it in a way where the creative booking committee doesn't know the finish.
Oh boy.
The only people that know the finish are Triple H and whoever he trusts to tell this is going to be the finish. And that used to be the way they used to do it back in the territory days, where there was just the one head booker. The problem is the one head booker had to have the trust of his entire staff and all of the people that wrestles for the head booker. So that's why, and it's just weird because how can you creatively tell a story without knowing the ending?
Exactly. Like, it seems like that could just be an absolute mess. And I think if I remember reading correctly, the, I don't know, what do you want to call them? The Colorado State, like, gambling something or other. I don't know what they're exactly called. They literally went out and said, yeah, no, this isn't happening here. So it's like, okay, so at least it's not happening in Colorado. I don't know if it's going to happen anywhere else, but it's just like, why?
It doesn't make sense. It's a predetermined sport. Yeah. Like, this, you know, like, the finishes have always been thought out. Like, I don't know how a creative team can tell stories without knowing what the payoff's going to be.
Exactly. I just think that would create a whole
the assumption, like, they know how to end this whole bloodline story, whether it be Cody Rhodes winning at WrestleMania or something happening with Sami Zayn. I figure they already know the ending to it. The only people that don't know are the fans. And rightfully so. So imagine if, like, they didn't know what to do in terms of the end of this bloodline story, and it just went on and on forever. We would kind of be talking about it the same vein as the way we talk about AEW and the way they're having troubles trying to keep up with the WWE product.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't think it would be the best idea, but...
It just doesn't make... It never... It has never made sense to me why you would bet on professional wrestling. That just seems like a way to, that just seems like a definite way to lose your money, unless you're like booking, like if you're betting on the obvious, you know?
Yeah.
You have to bet on the obvious, but to go on a whim and do a whim bet, I don't think that would work the same way it does in real professional sports.
I'm just going through the amount of just pain and stress that could just cause on not only just the bookers but just like wrestling in general, because that just having the whole head booker thing could create a whole mess of just like politics and more than usual backstage, like,
right, which is what they have now. I mean, the head booker would be Triple H, you know, but again, he has a creative team behind him.
Yeah.
You know, where they share these ideas and they bounce these ideas off of each other. So imagine if that was stripped away and it was only one sole person making the decision and keeping everybody else left in the dark until, you know, 2 hours before showtime. That would, like you said, it'd be mass chaos.
Exactly. So I don't think it's a good idea. But what do we know? We just do a podcast once a week. Who knows? All right, so Mike already asked a question we already kind of answered. Did Wyatt actually walk out? We don't think so. We just think he might actually be hurt, but yet again, I'm not so sure what we know. We are just going off of what we see online, so take it with a grain of salt, but yeah. I don't think he walked out.
Yeah, I don't think, I hope not, but I don't think he walked out.
I really hope not. Well, from one rumor mill to the other, there are conflicting stories on Alexa Bliss. She says she's not on hiatus, while other news sites say that she is on hiatus. Mike tends to believe her side of the story.
Yeah. I would believe her, too. Yeah, if she said she's not on hiatus, then she's not on hiatus. She's just...
Not there?
Just not there, you know? Just...
I mean, but I don't know. It's just, part of me is just like, okay, well, there has to be a reason why you're not there. Like, what's going on? Is she hurt again? I hope not.
Yeah, you would never want someone to be injured or anything like that.
It's just odd how it all went down, I guess.
Yeah, because the odd thing about it to me was she was being integrated into the Bray Wyatt storyline again. And I think that there is a certain area of wrestling fan that definitely wanted to see that reunion between her and Bray Wyatt, because for as weird as it ended, like, it was still like a really creative aspect of WWE programming that
it was still entertaining.
Yeah, I was still into it. I was still into her character, and I think she fit the bill and she fit the mold perfectly of being that little creepy, a little out of the, you know, box sort of character, it was working. So when they were starting to reintegrate Bray Wyatt into Alexa Bliss, I was actually really excited. And then it just, she just hasn't been on TV. So, I mean, I don't know if you would classify it as a hiatus, but if she says that she's not on hiatus, then I guess she's just waiting for a phone call to see what's next.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we can do is just wait and see what happens whenever she does come back.
Yeah, see, that's the thing about this podcast that I don't want people to get the wrong idea. We don't have any sources or scoops or anything like that. We just kind of read whatever's on the internet. And sometimes now with the internet and social media, like we've been saying throughout the show, you kind of have to take things with a grain of salt, you know?
We're
not in the know. We know as much as every other wrestling fan does. And so I'm, like you said, I'm hoping she's just not injured. It's just one of those things where they're just milking it and waiting for the right time.
Yeah, I completely agree. How good was Miko Satomura versus Roxanne Perez? Perez took some significant punishment in that match. Yeah, you could say.
Yeah. I watched that match earlier today. Oy. And the one thing I came away with is Roxanne got her ass beat. She won.
Yeah.
But at barely. What cost? Yeah, at what cost? Because Satomura was not taking it lightly. She was not taking the opportunity lightly. She was in there throwing some bombs, and she was really taking it to Roxanne. It was a really good match. I was actually excited because before we went on and started recording, I was watching NXT. These past couple NXT episodes have been pretty good. I'm not going to lie. They're kind of cooking for Stand and Deliver.
Which is good because that's what we need. Roxanne got the shit kicked out of her. That is this. That poor child. And that, I mean, clearly she proved it after the match, literally collapsing to the ground and having to get stretchered out. Hadn't really seen that since Shawn back in the day, so I thought that was kind of interesting how they pulled that.
Like a little homage.
So. I think it's I thought it was really good because it's unique. Like we said, we haven't seen that happen in decades. So
yeah, I'm just kind of bummed out because it looks like Roxanne is no longer going to be the NXT Women's Champion.
I hope not, but it's just like, are we really going to go that far with this? Or it's like, now you don't know. It's like, oh, was this like part storyline, part real? Was it all storyline? Was it all real? Like, what's going on? But then again, that's kind of the interesting part of wrestling where you're like, if you don't know what's going on, that's the intrigue part of it.
That's very true. And like I just said, we're just fans, you know? Yeah. We don't have that inside information, unfortunately, to see what's going on. I heard that maybe it's a possibility that they're just waiting to call her up on the main roster. You know,
would she
be ready for a main roster run?
I mean, I kind of don't want her to because I want to see her and Cora Jade go at it again.
Oh.
I mean, those two could, again, if they really put their minds to it, they could pretty much be the Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa of the women's division. So I would like to see it again. But as of right now, I don't think that's happening because I think Cora Jade's hurt, I believe.
Okay.
I mean, she hasn't been on TV either, so, I mean, we have 5,000 cases of where are these people, but, I would think it'd be a little too soon, but what do I know?
We know nothing.
This may be Roman Reigns' podcast, but we don't know anything, unfortunately.
We don't know anything at all.
We really don't. And our final question of the night is, what were our thoughts on JC Jane and Gigi Dolin? I was let down, said Mike.
It was just a match.
It was not what they built it up to be.
Yeah, I think the match was okay. The ending I didn't really care for.
Yeah, it was just lacking what you would have expected between those two. You expected the hatred, the animosity, the physicality, and it's like you got barely any of that. And I think they kind of made it clear who is going to benefit the most out of this breakup, and it's going to end up being Gigi. JC's still kind of a little green, I suppose. I would say maybe not green. She hasn't found her footing yet.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it was just, I went back and watched it, and I'm like, this is it?
Yeah, that's a kind of, I felt like it was, there was more to be desired, almost.
Yeah, which is a shame. So I would like to think that that means this isn't over. I think this is far from over, so hopefully the next one's a little more, personal, a little more physical.
Yeah, they could have amped up the physicality. And again, we all know how I feel about roll-up finishes and everything like that.
Yeah.
It just kind of came out of nowhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There was no drama built up. There were maybe a couple, if you would have threw a couple false finishes in there, you know, a couple kickouts, you know, and built up that drama that way, it could have worked out better. But for me, it just kind of, it was a flash.
Yeah, it was just like you blinked and, oh, okay, it's over.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
It's like, okay, great, that's not what we wanted to, you know, hear, but I mean, this is what we get, I guess. All right, just double checking to make sure we got through everything, but I do believe we are done with the questions.
All right, that was fun, as usual. It's always fun, and I definitely enjoy this new format of what we're doing, where we're just answering questions and discussing wrestling that way, because like I was telling Mike, the way we used to do it the old way, where we would recap everything, and you know, that was kind of difficult because it was kind of taking the fun out of everything, because you had to recap everything and write notes and make sure you had everything right, and you weren't just talking out of your ass, whereas like this time we could just kind of analyze things and be a fan. And because not everything's going to be talked about on the show, so we don't have to worry about, you know, just talking about meaningless stuff. We kind of let you guys dictate what we talk about on the show, and that's why it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's something new, and it's not like we're required or obligated to have to sit down and force ourselves to watch wrestling. It's like we willingly do it so we know what we can talk about during the show.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And it kind of is, it's reinvigorated the fan in me to search out other wrestling. I've been getting into ROH now that they've restarted and their weekly programming is back up. Definitely, if you're a fan of some good wrestling, check out the new ROH, because the last episode in particular, they had two women's matches on there. Wow. Billy Starks, who's only 18 years old.
I still can't get over that.
Yeah, against Trisha Dora. And that match was great. And then the main event was Athena versus Willow Nightingale for the ROH Women's Championship, and that match ruled.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Yeah, that match was fantastic. Like, I'm definitely a Willow Nightingale fan coming out of that match, because she brought it.
Yeah, all right, I need to go back and watch that then.
Yeah, you definitely need to check it out, because you would definitely enjoy it. It's good wrestling. It kind of reminded me of NXT Black and Gold, where it was just good wrestling.
Those are the good old days.
Yeah, and now you have Eddie Kingston, who quote unquote quit AEW to pursue Claudio Castagnoli and the ROH Championship. Their pay per view is at the end of the month on the 31st, so I'm hoping that's what they're gearing towards, is a Claudio Castagnoli versus Eddie Kingston match. And we all know that those two have a very bitter real history together. Was a friendship that kind of went sour when Claudio went to the WWE. You know, so there's some real animosity there. So to see a match like that happen, even though Claudio doesn't want to give Eddie Kingston a championship match, I think that's where we're headed. So
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, definitely check out what ROH has cooking up. So it's good stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I definitely have to get into it.
Yeah, for sure. It's on ROH. It's watchroh.com is there, and you can sign up, and then you get the weekly show. You also get the pay-per-view that's taken care of, and you also get their old library of old shows and DVDs and stuff like that. So it's a really good bargain for what you get.
Nice.
Yeah, so definitely check that out. Since I'm done plugging ROH, let's go ahead and plug this podcast. Like I said earlier, Spotify, owns Anchor FM, so now it's Spotify Podcast.
Through this avenue,
they distribute the podcast all across the board on the internet, so you can get it on Google, Apple, Stitcher, Radio Republic. Basically, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find this podcast by simply searching Ringside Rundown. If you cannot find this podcast on your platform of choice, let us know by hitting us up on social media at Ringside Rundown, and we will deliver you a link to this podcast on a silver platter. Yes, we have a silver platter ready for you, but you have to give it back because it's real silver and it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, we need it. Please don't take it away.
Don't take it away. Basically, like I said, if you want to interact with us like we do every week before we record an episode, we ask you guys to send in questions, comments, rants, opinions, anything wrestling related that you want voiced on this podcast. You can do so by hitting us up on Twitter at Ringside Rundown. Again, that's at Ringside Rundown. And it's also the same handle for Instagram. So if you want some cool wrestling pictures in your Instagram feed, check us out at Ringside Rundown. You can also get in contact with us and talk wrestling with us there. But like I said, via Twitter, like we do every week before we record an episode, we ask you guys to send us some questions because basically that's what we do here. We just talk wrestling, answer some questions, and it comes directly from you guys. If you want to get in touch with me personally and talk wrestling, you can reach me on Twitter at WrestlingChron. That's wrestling, C-H-R-O-N. Shay, where can they get in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at ShayleneHixon21, occasionally on Twitch at Shay_Hixon21. Definitely check out Eric's Twitch, though. I know you've been trying to get some more wrestling content onto there, so.
Yes. Now that with the release of 2K23 coming out, I definitely want to do some wrestling stuff. I sporadically do wrestling streams. Like, I did one yesterday. And it was really, really good. A lot of people came out, met some new people, had some couple wrestling fans talk wrestling with me. So I definitely want to do that more with the new game that's coming out. And I also want to do, like, watch-alongs, you know, like, find some random wrestling matches on YouTube and watch it with some people on Twitch. So definitely check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/EricTheGhost.
Yes, go check them out.
All right, so I think we're done here.
Yeah, I believe we are.
All right, so thank you guys for listening to this episode. Hopefully you listen to the next one coming out next week. For Shay Hixon, my name is Eric Vasquez, and we'll see you again.
See you later, guys.